Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
If the God of the Bible really exists, I would go gladly to hell. And anybody happy to go to heaven to worship such a creature is morally bankrupt.
It is because God's wrath is real that his mercy is relevant. Unless you have a real wrath, the biblical concepts of mercy and of grace are robbed of their meaning.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Excellent, excellent news here on Wretched Radio. That's right. It is official. Churches are now allowed to open. That is some terrific. Hold on. Hold on. Wait a second. I'm sorry. This just in. Update, churches are closed again. So note, while we were celebrating for a moment, they're open. They are now closed. So please.
Oh, wait, Todd.
Yeah, Tony.
No, latest is churches are now open again.
Excellent. Great Perfect. News, everybody. Yep. Churches are open once again. So make plans for this
wait,
Sunday.
Wait, Todd.
Okay, hold on. What?
I'm just reading. No, churches are closed. Sorry.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll keep you up to date on this subject and let you know when the wind stopped blowing.
You got a quarter, just flip it.
Zoinks, Scoob, last week, the president of the United States, last time I checked, he's the top guy on the totem pole. He said they're open. They're considered essential, which we've always known. You know, I think we might pick a better word for considering what is essential. Because while I get the point that certain things need to be open to run, I think that is a rather limited perspective on what is essential. For instance, let's just say that a particular construction project is not deemed essential. We don't need another office building at the risk of potentially getting coronavirus, so that's not considered essential. Unless, of course, you're the electrician who gets paid from wiring that building, and you use that money to buy groceries, you know, to keep your family alive. I'd say that's pretty essential. This all points toward language that seems to be the collective. I'm not sure, but I think there could be some subliminal, you know, there's a lot of people who believe there's all kinds of wacky codes in the Bible. I'm thinking maybe, just maybe, there's some code language that's going on in our culture. For instance, you've got, we're in this together. I think what they're trying to say is we are the collective. I could be wrong, but that's what it seems to be pointing. It's essential only if a lot of people are impacted by it, but it's not essential if just you are impacted by it. Since when don't we care about individuals and their lives? It certainly seems essential to me if I don't have a job and I can't provide for my family. That's feeling pretty essential. Churches, for a moment, were deemed essential, and then they were deemed unessential. So perhaps the bigger story that I saw that was kind of leading the way, while lots of churches are certainly talking about this, I believe it was Thursday, the president said, considering churches to be essential, and if you try to keep them closed, I might just step in and tell and somehow overrule the governors of those states that won't open up churches. California, John MacArthur announced at Grace Community Church, the president said we can go to church, so we're going to church. Oh, hold on. This just in, the Ninth Circuit, which had to get together lickety-split to make that decision. Can you imagine? I believe it was Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening almost, when the president made the announcement. We think the churches are considered essential, so get on it. They made that announcement Saturday. I mean, that's moving. You don't get put on the list of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and just get to hear your case heard that quickly and a verdict rendered. There was some intentionality to determine, No, it's not. And this battle, it appears it's heating up. Now, if I were a betting man, which I'm not because I'm a Christian, I would say I don't think this is going to come to a head. where churches need to really be seriously asking the question, should we go about the business of civil disobedience? There are some people that are calling for that. There are some people who are rather concerned about that. For instance, in Chicago, they put a parking ban. The mayor put a parking ban on a church that announced, we're going to open up. It was Philadelphia Romanian Church in Chicago. That's a little confusing, that name. Philadelphia Romanian Church. They were told by Mayor Lori Lightfoot, no, don't do that. So what happened? The police arrived, put up signs, no parking on the streets or in their private lot. And then they showed up Sunday morning to enforce the signs. Now, there were some rumors. Did they actually give tickets? Did they tow cars? What have you? Now, some of those details are a bit muddy, but the point is clear. You've got a mayor saying no, and we're going to use the police to close you down and not allow you to meet. The church pastor, I thought this was an interesting insight from a Romanian pastor who knows a little something about the collective. A lot of our members risked their lives to escape communism only to find it germinating in 2020 under Mayor Lightfoot in Chicago. Is it going to come to that? I'm guessing not. Case in point, to support my theory, because none of us are future prophets, right? The Minnesota governor decided to sort of back. Is he still back down? Can the churches get together? Or is that kind
of all? Last I saw.
Not so sure that won't change either. Governor Tim Walz, under pressure from the Roman Catholic Church and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, said, hey, we might just have to not do what we're told and get together and go to church if you don't let us, Governor. So they met with him, and they did talk just like that, by the way. They got together, and the governor decided, okay, you can meet. 10 people can get together for church on Sunday. I don't know if that's changed or not. This story is now a few days old. And these days, a story that's a few days old is like you might as well be reading about something from the 1920s. Nevertheless, restaurants could have 50 people, churches could have 10. And what I have to confess to you was one of the single most articulate statements I've ever heard. This is Governor Walz regarding why restaurants could host 50 people outdoors, but religious centers could not. The governor of Minnesota said, it's not a perfect answer. Here's the quote. Let's see if I can do this justice. All right, Tony, you're the reporter, so you asked me the question, why restaurants 50 and churches only 10? And I'll give you the answer.
So, Governor, how is it restaurants get 50 and churches only 10?
I think, and I'm hearing strongly on this, of trying to figure out how we make that happen, because I think the logic behind it, and I think, again, it was the predictability of who's there, but I think you could argue, boy, I see the same people every Sunday at my congregation, and in fact, the Smiths sat in the pew every year for 30 years, so we know exactly where they're at, and we know exactly where they are. He continued, I just want to say that I think there's a very strong sense of urgency for us to figure the peace out around churches. And I say that about all the businesses, but I do think these pieces of people's lives, we need to try and get it around. So I would just tell you, I think it goes with the predictability piece of it. I will again say I don't think that it's perfect. And I think there's some things that we still have to continue to figure out. Yeah, like one sentence that says something would be a really good start. I have no idea what any of that meant, frankly. Minnesota appearing to give it a little bit to the pressure of the Catholic Church and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. They moved a little bit. And you've got the president saying at a press conference, at my direction, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is issuing guidance for communities of faith. I'm identifying houses of worship, churches, synagogues, and mosques as essential places that provide essential services. He said he plans to override governors who are not allowing churches to reopen. Some governors have deemed liquor stores and abortion clinics as essential, but have left out churches and other houses of worship. That's not right, so I'm correcting this injustice and calling houses of worship essential. Along comes the Ninth Circuit and says, not according to us. And so churches were put on hold. Do I think that this will come to more than that? I think you might see some threatened lawsuits. I think you might see larger religious groups getting together to petition those in power to open up or let churches assemble, which I know is an arguable statement. How do we in our particular church make this decision? And I think the answer is you need to make that particular decision in your church. And I don't think that it applies necessarily to another church, and certainly not to other churches in other states. I think that there are some indeed moving parts in this whole story that do demand a different consideration on different levels from different people. And I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all. For instance, you've got an elderly congregation, I mean exclusively elderly, that are in the target zone. You're going to make a different decision than one that's dramatically younger or predominantly younger. It could depend on the state, the number of cases, the number of deaths. Georgia, we've been having days, zero people dying from coronavirus. That's different than perhaps New York still. So as we progress on this, it seems that while it's heating up, I don't think it's going to come to a boil. Nevertheless, even as it potentially does, we need to remember different churches and different zip codes are going to be making different decisions. This is Wretched Radio. Whilst you and I perhaps cannot do much work, God has not been sidelined by a virus, and he is working and he is fulfilling his promise to build his church, even in Nepal.
So there are 65 Nepalese fellowships ranging between about 4,000 to 5,000 believers who worship the Lord every day. And we see conversion every day, literally every day. People are added to the church.
The Spirit of God continuing to convict of sin, righteousness, and judgment, regenerating believers, filling Jesus' churches. And these new believers, they need Bibles. Would you please participate in this great work and provide Bibles to new believers in Nepal and around the globe? It is merely $5 per Bible. How many could you send through Bible League International? You can do that at wretched.org/Bible.
Here at Wretched, we rely on our gospel partners, because without you, there is no us. To show you how much we appreciate you and how much we need you, we wrote you a haiku. Please partner with Wretched. You will not regret it. Counting is hard. Okay, I'm the first to admit, not very good at haikus, but we do truly still need and appreciate our gospel partners. Our gospel partners not only help us keep the lights on around here, but they allow us to keep making Wretched every day. So if you are a gospel partner, thank you very much for your support. We do truly appreciate you. If you're not a gospel partner, would you consider it? If you love listening to Wretched and want to continue to hear us every day, visit wretched.org/donate for details on becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner. wretched.org/donate. And no more haikus. wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace.
Uh-huh. And you didn't think it was worth your time to pay attention in geography class.
I'm thinking about a village that we visited called Pirasmani. It took us about 4 hours to get there, and the road was so bumpy that we were a couple of basket cases by the time we got there. But you know what? There were 35 kids waiting there for us. They have no church in this village. Talk about an unreached place, and we're now operating a tomorrow club in that place.
You and I could not find that place on a map of Eastern Europe, but tomorrow clubs do, and they go, and they bring the gospel, and kids are getting saved. They're bringing the gospel home to parents, and churches are being started or revitalized. Would you please consider supporting your own tomorrow clubs? $30 per month will disciple 30 kids in places you and I couldn't even find on a map. tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
If you're like most people, you have a passion to see souls saved, but don't know where to start. Might I suggest Hearts for the Lost? They assist local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They fly out to your church, put on an evangelism seminar, and then go out into the streets with you to put it into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or to schedule a conference, go to heartsforthelost.com.
heartsforthelost.com.
Know your church fathers. Basil of Caesarea was Bishop of Caesarea in the 4th century. He was a defender of orthodoxy and wrote several important works, proving the divinity of the Holy Spirit and refuting the Arian heresy. Most importantly, he introduced the Trinitarian formula, describing God as one being and three persons. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is it time for civil disobedience? This is Wretched Radio. That is a very big question. It seems different pastors are answering it differently. For instance, I'm warming
up. Growling, sir.
A pastor in Kentucky urges faith leaders to reopen in defiance of governor's coronavirus orders and step up and roar. Is that the role of the church? I don't think so. Nevertheless, that fellow made it onto Fox and Friends, encouraging other faith leaders to defy the government. Is that even an option for Christians? And I think the answer to that is yes. Yes, it is. When is the trickier question, and what makes it even a little bit more dicey is that that could be a different answer based on where you are. Somebody in rural Texas might make a different decision than some pastor in Manhattan is going to, or depending on the demographic of your congregation. There are different considerations. I do not think yet we have a one-size-fits-all. Can a church ultimately defy the government? And the answer to that is, sure, if they're telling us to sin. Now, I think most people, as this has unfolded before us, have said it seems reasonable. The government does not appear to be simply identifying churches to shut them down. Now, there's some people who would say, well, there's sometimes that a few. Yeah, I agree. There have been some people that have done that. I believe that it was the governor in Kentucky, if I'm not mistaken, the mayor in Chicago. There have been a couple who have done that and then ultimately have also backed off. Nevertheless, I think that when the government tells us to sin, we have the Acts 4 ability to say, sorry, we can't obey you. We have to obey God. Is it reasonable for the government to say, in an effort to protect a lot of lives based on the current information we have, we're asking the churches to participate and close down for the safety of the masses? I think so. That seems pretty commonsensical to me. Even if you do not believe that that falls underneath the jurisdiction of the government given in 1 Peter 2 or in Romans 13, that their job is to simply punish bad people. You could also argue, well, it's also to protect good people, so this is a protecting of people, so it's within their jurisdiction. Regardless, I think most people would say it just makes sense. If that indeed can save what was originally thought to be hundreds of thousands or millions of lives, it made sense. Well, that's clearly changed, hasn't it? And we've also learned a particular demographic is far more susceptible. I believe the number, give or take, is like 84% are 65 and up. Furthermore, underlying issues has become something that is known, that most, if not virtually all cases have had some sort of underlying issue with it. So more details have been disclosed because time has revealed them. And you've got different people in different areas that have experienced it worse than other people. So now I think pastors are asking, is it still reasonable for the government to say, no, you can't meet? And I think that's why we're hearing different voices in different quarters. I think it depends on where you are. I don't know what's going on in Minnesota. You guys know what the death rate there is in your hometown, your home state of Minnesota? How many people are dying every day?
90% are 75 and older.
Okay, and how many people have been dying on a daily basis in the last week? Has the curve been flattened? You've got all of these considerations that are going on and different pastors that are processing it and saying, you know, I'm starting to disagree with the government's assessment that this is for the good of the collective by us staying closed. And we're starting to feel like, hey, now you're overstepping your bounds. Can it get to that point? And I think the answer to that is we better get there real slow. because there's a lot of considerations involved. First of all, I don't think we're going to have a uniformity in this. I don't think we're going to have unity of voice on this because of the disparity of differences in different territories. Furthermore, you're going to have different churches that are just in different places with their attitude toward constitutional rights and what their theology is based on what is the government role and the church role. So all of these theologies that have caused us in the past to have a difference of opinion about engagement of Christians in the political realm, how we speak to the political realm. You've got people on one side of it. That would be, for instance, the doctrine of the lower magistrates, where if we, the lower, quote, magistrates, don't believe that those magistrates that are in authority over us are doing their job right, then we have the responsibility to remove them. That's one position. On the other side of the spectrum, you've got people going, absolutely not. You submit to the government. You just do what you're told. This is not Nero. We just preach the gospel, period. No engagement. You just let them do their thing. That's a broad spectrum. So now you bring that to the party and bake that into the recipe, and you are not going to have a cake that is very pretty because you've got different people with different ingredients going into this. Can it get to that point? I believe it can. Should we not, however, exhaust any legal means first? Should we not be going through the system that was put in place for this very reason, that the founding fathers, with wisdom, they realized that anybody in power can take advantage of the situation and make bad decisions, and there is redress for the people? And should we not take advantage of those first before just blatantly denying the government and their rulings on this? And you can even argue whether it's law or not, and do they have the right to make these mandates? Do we not have a court system to resolve that? Aren't we perhaps playing more by the rules that I think we agree were pretty good if we pursue those things before we just flat out disobey? There's another consideration that I believe is worthy of our consideration in this. And we want to be careful because we don't want to be pragmatists with this, but I do think we have to ask the question about testimony. Let's just say, wherever you happen to be, your church decides, we're going to open up. The government said, no, you can't. Or the government said, you can only have 10 people in your building or whatever the rules are. And you say, we're just not going to do it. In fact, we're going to be real literalists, and we're not only going to just greet each other with a handshake, we're going to be planting some holy kisses. That's what we're doing. In defiance of what the government is recommending or mandating, whatever the correct legal term is or isn't, what does that say to the world? I don't think we can ignore that. I don't think that we can simply set that aside and go, it doesn't make any difference. For instance, there was a church, I didn't keep the story. It was in, I believe, Mississippi. It was a Pentecostal church that was going to open up. Somebody set the building on fire and then wrote on the side, that used some spray paint or chalk on the sidewalk. They misspelled hypocrites, but nevertheless, it is a tricky word. They said, let's see if you stay open now, or let's see if you guys meet now. Burn down the building. Because they were so upset that this church was defying the government and opening up. I think we need to ask about our testimony. I think we need to ask, what will the world think of Christians if we do this? Whether there's another surge or not, our current world, the only reason that I can think so many people are pushing so high, if you ain't been to Georgia, y'all, it's a real trip right now because our governor in Georgia led the way. Brian Kemp kind of led the way. He was one of the, like with Texas and one other state that was kind of ahead of the curve on opening things up. And yet, there are more rules now than during the height of coronavirus. It's fascinating to me. We went for a walk on, I can't remember what day it was. We went for a walk. And some stores are open, some stores are closed. Oh, did you want to come into the store? You have to wear a mask. Now we have to wear masks to go into some store. You didn't before, but now you do. The threat, it's clearly lessened in Georgia. There's statistically, there's no question about that. Currently, I can't speak for tomorrow or a potential surge, but right now, it is definitely flattened out here. And yet, people are actually being more protective of themselves. Why? The only thing I can conclude is a horrific fear of death. They are so terrified to get this thing. I'm not arguing the epidemiology of it. Does it kill? Doesn't it kill? The statistic? Other people can go through those numbers. That's not my point. They're terrified. And if you, as a Christian church, go about the business of opening up, you know what we might be saying to them? We don't care if you die. Some Harvard professor, talk about ridiculous, believes that this is now the Republican-Democrat thing is an evangelical atheist thing. Because we believe in the afterlife. We don't care about this life, and we don't care if people die because we're going to glory. That's what a Harvard prof thinks. Well, there's a grain of truth in that. We don't care about the things of this earth to the extent the unbeliever does. We don't have that fear of death that the unbeliever has, but that doesn't mean we aren't concerned about this life. That's just rather uneducated pontificating. The world is terrified to die, and I think that if we are going to consider opening as we do that, and each church is going to make their own decision, we need to keep the issue of testimony in mind. This is Wretched Radio.
It is ingenious when you think about it. The Mission Ball is a simple soccer ball covered with biblical text. An effective tool for drawing a crowd, making a connection with people, inviting curiosity, and ultimately creating opportunities to proclaim the gospel. Because the Mission Ball is covered with a thorough law and gospel presentation written in ink that doesn't come off very easily. Find out how you can support the Mission Ball. Go to themissionball.org. Themissionball.org. This is Wretched Radio. Hi, I'm Tony Verkennis. Chicago officials are threatening to close or even bulldoze a church that has continued meeting in defiance of a state order saying the governor's action has the force of law. The state of Illinois has banned in-person church services larger than 10 people amid the coronavirus pandemic. Allison Arwadi, the commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health, sent a letter Friday to Chicago's Elam Romanian Pentecostal Church saying she has the power to stop the congregation from meeting by whatever means are necessary, which could actually include bulldozing the building. Arati wrote, "If you continue to host gatherings in violation of the executive order, the city of Chicago will take all necessary measures to abate the nuisance to ensure the safety of the city's residents." Elam Romanian Pentecostal Church met Sunday, employed a series of health restrictions that included keeping attendees at least 6 feet apart. Temperatures were checked at the door. The church congregation was at about 15% of seating capacity. The pastor of the church, Christian Ionescu, said our guidelines for the services in this church are stricter than the CDC's. Arwadi, in her letter to the church, mentioned an Arkansas church case from early in March. The case involved events from March 6th through the 8th and also March 11th. The coronavirus outbreak wasn't declared a national health emergency until March 13th. Ionescu rejected Arwadi's argument, noting that people in every part of society, including in the Illinois governor's office and in the White House, have contracted the coronavirus. He said the church will continue meeting. Staff at a pro-life pregnancy center in Zion, Illinois, found out from a Chicago Tribune report this month that Planned Parenthood was opening a new abortion facility in the nearby suburb of Waukegan. Until then, the pro-lifers had no idea about plans for the new center just 10 minutes away. Doug Carlson, president of the board of the Family Resource Center in Zion, said it's very disappointing that they put one of these facilities right next door. The Resource Center's director, Mary King, said, "I think most of Waukegan found out by the newspaper report on the day that it was presented." Planned Parenthood, you'll remember, clandestinely planned and built another abortion facility in Illinois less than a year ago. The state legislature in 2019 removed all protections for the unborn, making the state an abortion destination in the Midwest. Planned Parenthood has capitalized on the change with a stealth expansion plan. On Friday, about 400 pro-lifers wearing masks and standing apart gathered at the Waukegan Planned Parenthood to protest the new abortion facility. Eric Scheidler of the Pro-Life Action League attended, saying the response from passerbys was overwhelmingly positive. Before the Planned Parenthood opened, the Family Resource Center had already begun the process of adding an ultrasound program to its other free services. According to Mary King, we're hoping we'll be able to intervene before they get into the Planned Parenthood doors, saying Planned Parenthood may have taken local pro-lifers by surprise, but God was not surprised by this. More Wretched Radio straight ahead. I'm Tony Verchemis.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is administration, the spiritual ability to guide, govern, manage, and correct. Church leaders are charged with keeping the church on the biblical path. As God has given that charge, He has also provided the gifts which enable us to fulfill that charge. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The malignant Wretched Radio. Well, according to Harvard, this is Wretched Radio. If you recall, was it Yale or was it Harvard? Can't keep the Ivy League separate in my noggin. I believe it was Harvard saying homeschool, very, very bad for our country. We got to shut that thing down. Although now the governor of New York is kind of thinking maybe this homeschool thing isn't such a bad idea after all. Nevertheless, Harvard saying homeschooling, bad, toxic, all kinds of abuse. And we don't edumacate the kids as goodly as they do at public schools. We indoctrinate. They don't indoctrinate. Remember, you don't indoctrinate when you believe you're right. Which is what the public educators would say. We're right. Evolution is right. Sex ed is right. Abortion is right. So we're not indoctrinating. We're just teaching them the truth. Yeah. Well, we think the Bible is right. We think Jesus is the only way. And we think human beings, even in the womb, are imago Dei, image bearers of God. So we're not indoctrinating either. We're just teaching our kids. Now, Steven Pinker from Harvard, a psychology professor, texting, atheists who believe in this life are more concerned with health and safety. We devalue life. Why? Quote, belief in an afterlife is a malignant delusion. Hey, that's name calling. Since it devalues actual lives and discourages action that would make them longer, safer, and happier. Maybe that explains why Christians give more money for human flourishing than the atheists do. No, wait, that would be the exact opposite of what that would be saying.
Well, hey, they give money to, you know, museums.
Yes, they do give money to museums. They give the arts, very important. You get the Kennedy Center, how could we live without it? It turns out Christians actually do at least put their money where their mouths are. We give more money than the atheists do. That's just a fact, scientific fact, if you like. And yet he says, it's just an uneducated statement, that because we believe in an afterlife, we don't care about this life. Well, if money is any marker, we do. Furthermore, Christians tend to be good neighbors. We take care of our property. We mow the lawn. We pull the weeds. We do try for betterment of the planet because we have ourselves a command from God. Take care of this place. Subdue it. It's got a curse going on. It's going to be a little bit prickly along the way. But take care of the planet that I am entrusting you with. Use it for your good, for my glory. The environmentalist has no basis on which to stand. This to me is fascinating, that his misperception of the Christian worldview, it's so shallow, and yet he pipes up anyway. If I understand evolution right, it's still the survival of the fittest, and we should not care if we're blowing a hole in the ozone. Who cares? If this is the only life-sustaining planet from an evolutionary worldview, so what if we torch the place? What's the point? This is it. But his perspective is, because this is it, we actually care about life more. I would ask Steven Pinker, I understand why you care about your life more, but why would you care about others' lives more as an atheist? You have no worldview on which to stand. And this is another one of those moments where we all collectively say, whew, the atheistic worldview and the person who holds that worldview does not live consistently with their beliefs. And that's a relief. I'm glad that they care that people are going to get sick and die. that we should care about that. We Christians have a basis for that. Steven Pinker doesn't. And yet, he says that we're the malignant ones. Exhibit A. What's really behind Republicans wanting a swift reopening? Evangelicals. I didn't know that. Another demonstration. This is a reminder. The world, we understand the difference between being an evangelical and being a Republican. I hope. The world doesn't. Two get put together synonymously, constantly. They're one and the same in the mind of the unbeliever. And so he's currently persuaded that the reason that there's people pushing for a reopening of society is simply because we don't care if people get sick and die because we're going to heaven, which would assume we don't care about our own lives temporally either, which, of course, is ridiculous. Furthermore, we do find ourselves back discussing the same issue. How do we weigh the issues? If you recall, the governor of New York said, look, depression is bad, but it's not death. Well, guess what? It turns out it's becoming death. Don't know if you saw the story. California doctors say they've seen more suicide deaths than COVID deaths during the lockdown. Whoa. The trauma department chief at John Muir Medical Center in Walnut Creek, apparently it's by Berkeley in Oakland, during the lockdown, doctors at the facility have seen more deaths by suicide than from coronavirus. We've seen a year's worth of suicide attempts in the last 4 weeks. Oh, so maybe the lockdown is becoming death. We're back to how do you weigh these issues? I would actually pull it back even further. So we can do the scale system, and I think that's worth doing. On the one hand, you've got death. That's very bad. On the other hand, you've got issues that are not as bad. I grant the governor that. Issues like economic hardship, unemployment, losses of fortune. He even threw in there domestic abuse. I'd like to see that commercial, by the way. Have you noticed all the commercials? Everybody's having a grand time at home. They're doing puzzles. They're practicing their athletics in an inventive sort of way. The pets are happier. And here's the commercial I'd like to see. During the lockdown, we realize that families are getting to spend a lot of time together. Shut up, woman! Get on my back! Come here! So we hope you enjoy this time together. Not seeing that, but that's a reality. And that's going on. And we weigh those issues because we understand that death is bad, but death is not the end for any of us, frankly. We just have a better outcome than the unbeliever. So we need to weigh these things. But I would pull it back because at some point that the cure is worse than the disease, that is a valid statement. It's debatable when that happens, but that is a valid statement. The weighing of the issues, very tricky. People's weight system, it's going to be debated, but it's a valid statement. But let me pull it back further as we consider this and engage in this conversation, and I'll say it for the 912th time. I'm not the arbiter of when all things get opened. My opinion is the same as yours, same as anybody else's. It's just that, my opinion, and so I'm withholding it because it's... just, why would I offer it? Like, why would you want to listen to me on such issues? I'm just observing it like you are, but we're trying to think it through. And I think that there's a theological consideration that can help the conversation, and that is this question. How does the world run? How does it operate? How did God... not how did the system evolve? How did God set up the place to work? Well, we go back to the garden. And what do we see the command given to women? You're going to have children and it's going to hurt. Sir, you're going to work and you're going to sweat and there's going to be thorns and thistles. Subdue this place. There's your mandate. Subdue it and go to work. And it's going to be hard because of the fall and the curse. And so we see immediately the emphasis on work, that we are to be working to eat. That's how the planet operates. God has set up the system. We cannot fail to remember this. When you look at economics, for instance, you think, well, smaller government, that's That's better because it works. No, that's wrong Christian perspective. Smaller government is a biblical idea, and that's why it works. Catch the difference? Hey, small government, man, that's just the best system. It really works. No. It works because that's the system that God has said this is the way it should operate on the planet. He has put structures in place. And if we fail to utilize those structures, things go poorly. For instance, family. God's designed the foundational institution of our culture, families. So when we rewrite families, things will not work right. Period. That's just they can't work right. You will. Well, the society crumbled because families fell apart. Well, the society had to crumble because if families aren't intact, a society can't operate well. It can't. Why? Because God made it this way. How does it work? God created work for us to do so that we could eat. Now, how that transaction takes place, we can get into economic systems in more detail another day. But you work to eat. Another command that we see from Paul to the Thessalonians. You got to work to eat. Right now, you've got pushing 40 million people who are being 63% are being paid more than they were actually making when they were working. That can't work. Can't work. Why? Because God didn't set up the planet this way. So as we go about debating and having this conversation, let's not fail to remember that at some point this cannot be sustained because this is not the way that God made the place to operate. It can't. This is Wretched Radio.
Thanks much for being here. Always appreciate when you choose to spend part of your day with Wretched Radio, especially now that we've unofficially began summer. Feels different this year, though. Wonder why. One thing that doesn't feel different is the Wretched website, wretched.org. It is, lovingly and truthfully, the home of all things wretched. You'll find full 60-minute Wretched Radio programs, complete 30-minute Wretched TV episodes, and our Wretched store. Over 40 amazing resources like Jesus Unmasked, Drive-By False Teaching, Don't Stub Your Toe, and our latest evangelistic booklet, The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs That Jesus Is God. The Wretched Library, where you'll find a whole bunch of videos on topics ranging from abortion to evangelizing, marriage to pneumatology. Wretched.org, the home of all things wretched, made possible by our gospel partners. And if you would, visit wretched.org/donate. If you're able, become a gospel partner. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Good news? Yeah! Lots of it. Due to the pandemic, guess who's been shut down for a number of weeks? That's right, Planned Parenthood. You know what that means. Women who are experiencing a crisis, they are fleeing to other centers to get prenatal help and free ultrasounds. That means preborn centers are busier than ever. That means you and I have an opportunity to support them to be giving free ultrasounds 80% of the time. Mom chooses life because she sees it's her baby in her womb. And we need some help filling up the warehouse at preborn so that they can provide prenatal services and postnatal services. Month of May, $100,000 match. Not kidding. Would you please support preborn.org/wretched at this rather crucial time? preborn.org/wretched.
Imagine, if you would, a man. A man who lived such an extraordinary life that Western civilization actually changed the entire calendar system to commemorate his birthday. The obvious question would be, who was that man? Followed by, what did he do to deserve such an honor? Well, that man doesn't have to be imagined. That individual is Jesus Christ. The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs Jesus Is God, is the perfect booklet for every skeptic or unbeliever who believes that Jesus was just a mere mortal. To get your copies of The Man Who Split Time, visit wretched.org/time today. Read it, and you'll be back. And get me more copies to give away to anyone and everyone. The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs Jesus Is God, is available now at wretched.org/time. wretched.org/time. Wretched. Amazing grace.
Yeah.
books of the Bible. First and Second Chronicles traces God's unfolding plan from Adam through the Babylonian captivity. When you wonder what God is doing in the world, Chronicles shows us this pattern. He is calling a people to himself, placing them under the rule of his king, and preparing them for worship. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Indeed. This is Wretched Radio. Another famous Christian bites the dust. Oh, so unnecessary. Don't know if you heard the news story, whether you follow the Canadian Christian rock band Hawk Nelson or not. Fox News picked up on it, so it must have some oomph behind it. A young man saying, "I no longer believe in God," giving scant information as to why, but I read the details that at least were provided publicly, and it just makes me because he is asking questions and not receiving answers. A young man who grew up in a Christian home, I don't know what denomination or stripe, nevertheless, he was asking some basic questions, or maybe at the time he wasn't, but he was never being given big truths and big Christian defenses as to why the veracities of the Christian faith are veracities, why they're true. And so it is, we see a young man who sang his Christian songs, who trolloped around in Christian circles, now saying, "You know what, I don't believe in God." The name of the band again is Hawk Nelson. Joey, I don't know how big they were, but they're big enough to get on Fox News.
Yeah, they
and to
were
make
kind
all the
of
Christian
a
Post
medium,
and
big.
All the different
yeah.
outlets here, stating, "After growing up in a Christian home, being a pastor's kid, playing and singing in a Christian band, and having the word Christian in front of most of the things in my life, I'm finding that I no longer believe in God. That's a drag. I'm stunned," he writes, "by the number of people in visible positions within Christian circles that feel the same way as I do." What? "Like me, they fear losing everything if they open up about it." Well, yeah, you should, because if you're not a Christian, you shouldn't be in the biz, man. Then you are just using God to peddle him for merchandise and to make a living. So it's not about losing everything. It is no longer ascribing to those Christian truths. You don't believe them anymore. You can't be a spokesperson for them. That's pretty simple. A thought. He recalled some uncomfortable church moments, such as praying in public and emotional cries for the Holy Spirit at youth events. Then he goes on to give his reasons why he's no longer a Christian. Mom and dad, pay attention. If you have not addressed these issues with your kid, you could have yourself another Hawk Nelson, or whatever the young man's name is. Make sure, youth pastor, you are not simply playing with, no, don't play with whipped cream anyway. No whipped cream, no peanut butter business, no gross out games. We'd need zero of, none of it. None of it. We don't need any. Well, the kids, man, they got to have some fun. Sure they do. The world offers fun. The church should be offering truth and a foundation. You don't understand, man. They won't come if they don't have fun. Oh, I'm trying to find a verse in the Bible that says the church's job is to amuse and entertain the kids. I can't find that, but I sure can find a lot of verses that teach us that it is our responsibility to pass along the truths that have been given to us, that have been passed to us by people who bled and died, not the least of whom was our Savior. That's our job, not whoop-de-doo. The list of things that didn't make sense to him kept growing throughout the years. He noted, quote, Eric, can you guess what the biggie is?
Why
if God
does
is
good,
all yeah. loving and all powerful, why is there evil in the world? Can he not do anything about it? Does he choose not to? He never heard the answer to this. If not, I would prefer he say, "I do not accept the Christian explanation for this." I'd prefer that, but that's not the way it was presented. It's like, well, the Christian, but nobody's ever been able to sort out that conundrum for me. Are you kidding? This has been sorted out since the beginning. We've got this figured out. Now, he may not like it. That's a different issue. Not hearing it? Church, this is... Sorry, but this is why we're doing Road Trip to Truth. I am telling you, this series that we have created, it is... We're right now we're in polishing stage on this 13-episode TV show, Road Trip to Truth, the first season. It's all being polished, putting together a study guide for youth group because of kids like this. Also, later, we're putting together a homeschool curriculum. That's going to be a ways out because it's far more detailed. But the youth group curriculum, it hits this question right on the nose. Why is there evil in the world? Because God ordained it. What? Is he not loving? Clearly he's loving because the Bible says so. And we need to figure out how to harmonize it because it's perfectly clear in God's mind. He ordained evil because out of that, something greater than we could ever imagine is going to happen. And that greater thing is we are going to know God better and deeper than we could if evil did not exist. Now, people can reject that and go, I don't like that answer. That's fine. I get that. When Christians struggle with that, I even understand that to a degree. How do you remedy that? It's a different, it's filtering life through a different system. Instead of the how does this work for me system, what does this say about God is the system? If God created a universe, and it's a pretty big place, fairly complex, and he put two people here to represent us, knowing that we would sin, knowing that there would be evil, catastrophe, war, all kinds of wicked behavior, because out of that, his glory would shine greater because of the redemptive work of his son, the Lord Jesus Christ, who became sin that we might become the righteousness of God. Then instead of focusing on, well, I don't know that I like that, I should be asking, whoa, what is it that I am to learn about God? If he is that amazing, that great, that profound, that good, that delightful, and this is the means that he has chosen to demonstrate that so that I can enjoy it, I want in. That should be my perspective change. Now, well, I don't think this is right. I don't think that I would have done it this way. That's because we can't grasp God and his goodness and his bigness and his vastness. And why that he has done this, because we are going to enjoy him more than Adam and Eve ever could. That is a staggering thought. They walked with him in the cool of the eve, enjoying God, not as much as you and I are in the new garden. Not nearly as much, because we will have seen, whoa, he saves sinners? He doesn't save good people, God saves bad people? Because he's that good? Whoa. And you're going to bask in that and swim in the depths of that knowledge for all of eternity and never get to the bottom of its goodness. I need to adjust my perspective, and our kids need to understand this. And so this isn't just a, okay, so here's the glib answer why there's evil in the world. Now let's move on and get back to the squirt guns. No, now we need to show how good God is and how amazing grace is and what Jesus did for us on the cross. And to start to begin, if that's what God wants us to know about him and enjoy about him, I want to get on that now. I don't want to wait for heaven. I want to start experiencing that life abundant now. Back to the Hawk Nelson singer denying that God exists anymore in his mind. He struggled with, quote, why does God say not to kill, but then instruct Israel to turn around and kill men and women and children to take the promised land? Could that be any simpler? And yet, he's using this as his excuse to deny the existence of God? That's staggering to me. Again, I prefer he say, you know, I don't like it. I don't like that God says this and then does that. I don't like it. Or I don't grasp it. But that's not the way that this is being presented. He didn't know the answer. And I suspect he was never offered one. At least not consistently and persistently. How's about there's a difference between killing and murder? How's about everybody who dies, in a sense, God kills because he takes their life? How's about that perspective? And God is right in doing so, because God doesn't owe any of us a single breath, let alone our next breath. God can kill anybody that he wants to. Murder, verboten. If it is justifiable because it's been commanded by God, God can use human beings to execute other people. But that's not murder. That's killing. That's the difference. The command is thou shalt not murder, not thou shalt not kill. We can kill animals to eat them, too. We're not murdering animals. We're killing them to eat them because they're tasty. Quote, here's another struggle. Get ready for this one. The artist came to the conclusion the Bible can't be trusted because in the end he felt it was human, flawed, and imperfect. So he never was taught the veracity of the Bible in that textual criticism tells us this book is exactly accurate. It's not a game of telephone. Another subject we hit in Road Trip to Truth, that it was not passed down orally. It's a written transmission, thousands of manuscripts. But here's the biggie. Get ready for this. Kid, pastor's kid. This is why he doesn't believe in God. Here it is. Drum roll, please. Why does Jesus have to die for our sins?
There we are.
That's more killing again. Are you kidding me? That this young man doesn't know the answer to that question? Penal substitutionary atonement? The lamb sacrifices pointing to the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world? He was singing Christian songs, growing up in a Christian home, and never understood the basics. Oh, youth pastor, your responsibility? Get on it. And don't listen to the voices that tell you, we got to entertain a man. Like, this kid has lived his life being entertained and entertaining, but he doesn't know the truth. And when he dies in his sins, if he hasn't repented and trusted Jesus, he's going to hell. And so will a lot of the kids in your youth group. Get on it, sir. Mom and Dad, we too. Until tomorrow, go serve your King.